Welcome to Prima's 2023 podcast series. My name is Shonda Ragland. I am the Senior Director of Education and Training at Prima. On this Prima podcast, Dr. Fernando Bronco will discuss injury prevention, treatment, and the aging workforce. Dr. Bronco is the AVP Claims and Chief Medical Officer at Midwest. We will also be joined by Prima's Education Coordinator, Taekwon Gilbert. Taekwon will moderate the discussion. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for joining us today, Fernando.
Thank you, Taekwon, for inviting me.
No problem. So to start, why do you think the workforce is becoming older?
It's a very interesting question. I'm going to speak in general. I think most of us understand that after World War II, there was, as the GIs came back from the war, and now, millions and millions of couples finally got married and started their lives. There was what was called the baby boomers, and that created a baby generation that went from 1945, 46 to until 1964, 65. I'm part of this generation because I was born in 1963. I'm the end of it. And this generation represents a very, very large group of people. And as you can imagine, most of them already retired, and the last ones are retiring now. That tells you that will be a tendency if these baby boomers don't retire, and that's a possibility, there will be an aging of the working population. And why are baby boomers not retiring as much as they used to? For several reasons. I'll list a few of them, but in terms of give you some statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that give us a lot of good information. Percentage-wise, in the year 2000, over 55 years old was only 13% of the working population. By 2021, in a span of only 20 years, you increased to 23%, almost double. And by 2030, is expected that will be 25% of the working population will be over 55. That's, not necessarily super old in terms of the new generations. And also with baby boomers, as we know, the life expectancy has increased tremendously in the last few decades, and baby boomers are living much longer with better life quality. And a lot of them are also choosing to continue to work for reasons keep engaged, and those are the positive reasons why people stay working. Unfortunately, there is other reasons why people stay working. There is also called a necessity. We have a lot of older employers that cannot hire because for changes in be the economy or how things went, their kids are probably not as well off. And to a certain degree, they need to help out. That means the grandparents are having pitch in more into this budget of the kids and the grandchildren. And that's one thing that happens, and those have been happening all over the country. Also, there is a very large group that's very different from the group before. If you think about baby boomers, then you think about the group before, we call the best generation, the people that grew up post-World War I during a depression. These people were big savers. They save, and they were the parents of the baby boomers. And they had very high rates of savings. Baby boomers were not nearly as good at savings as their parents were. That tells you there is a lot of people that had no savings, and then they have to be forced to continue working. One interesting thing that I think more important than 55 years old, 19% of the people in the country over 70 years old, that is not by any means young, is still working. That means one out of five of people over 70, if you consider there's a lot of people at that age with some major medical problems, that means decreases the pool tremendously. Even so, in that regard, 19% are still working. And if you compare 30 years ago in 1994, they were only 11%. That means there are positive reasons why the workforce is getting older. Or, and there's also negative reasons, you know, it's like a savings, having to stay on the force. They can't retire for family reasons or savings reasons. But there's no doubt that it's a tendency that will continue, even as the baby boomers go away, because we know the birth rate has been decreased tremendously in the subsequent generations, and that will determine less of a pool. But we can talk about that at one point. But that's my just general why the working population is becoming older.
How does this affect injury and treatment of the workforce?
It's a great question, because compare the two populations, and one important thing to say is that in here I'm going to use generalizations. You know, not all older individuals behave in the same way as the same way as all young individuals. They all not necessarily behave the same way, but there is a tendency for older individual, older employers, to have less injuries because they have a tendency to be more careful and pay more attention to what they're doing and follow protocols more often, are more experienced. That means they're less likely to make certain mistakes, you know, like in anything, at least like in life. And a younger individual is the opposite. That they have a tendency to be more impulsive, less training, and injuries are seen more often with this younger individual. The big difference also is that sort of balances this in some way, is that younger individuals have a tendency to heal much faster and better than older individuals. Let's say if you compare a injury, let's say a lumbar pain or a muscle strain, an older individual, and you hear this, you know, anecdotally, you know, like in your family, you see you are 25 years old and you pull a muscle in the gym and 2 days later you're back at the gym doing fine, and then your father pulls a muscle in the gym and it takes him 20 days to feel better. And that's normal because there is a tendency to take longer to heal in an older person. The same way in terms of compensation, let's say you have a brain injury when a person is 25 and a person of 60, my age, that means if you have exactly the same injury, let's say, you know, exactly the same area of injury, the tendency for the 25-year-old is to improve tremendously compared to the 60-year-old. The 60-year-old takes much longer to improve if he improves or she from this injury. And also what's called neuroplasticity, there is a tendency for the brain of a young person to compensate much faster than the brain of an older person. Then it kind of balances out in terms of injury and treatment. You definitely need to think about treatment much faster on the older population, because knowing that this healing process is slow doesn't mean you shouldn't treat a young person, but there's an incredible capacity of healing on their cells, you know, and that's something to look into. That is the nutshell of what I see in terms of how you need to focus. Obviously, you treat everybody, but you need to be more attentive towards the older employer.
Now, how did COVID influence this equation?
Yeah, that is a very interesting thing. I think we all understand that COVID was an event that basically made a paradigm shift in pretty much every area of our society, you know, and the labor force certainly has changed completely. There is a huge change, so much that all the tendencies that we had before are somewhat changed on the short term by the COVID epidemic, because if COVID had been a crisis in the labor force for, let's say, 3 to 4 months, and then everything went back to normal, it probably wouldn't have had such a paradigm shift as we see happen. But COVID, we're still feeling the effects, and this is three years plus after the beginning of the epidemic. That means it has dramatically changed the work and how the relationships between employer and employee are very different since COVID. I don't know how much that will return to normal. I think a lot of it will never return to normal. And I'll say a couple things. These are my opinions. But it is a big curveball that it really has changed so dramatic. Like, for example, life expectancy in the country. For the first time, probably since World War II, since World War II, that life expectancy went down in the United States for males and females. And that's very significant. It doesn't affect the labor force that much. But for something to influence life expectancy, it has to be an event that has really, really disrupted the status quo. And COVID did. You know, it was a pretty alarming excess deaths, and that's why the life expectancy went down. We're probably going to see this eventually coming back up as a tendency, but this is a reality that we have to see. We also have to see that some of the changes, you know, the labor force is different than it was before. Number one, there was the big retirement, as you can call. I'll give you an example for physicians. I'm a physician myself. I know thousands and thousands of physicians that were working beyond 65 years old. When COVID hit, they all had to retire because risks of, you know, being 70 years old and working in during the pandemic, you know, with all the uncertainties at the time. And those doctors all just decided to retire and they never came back, you know. And as I said, the crisis had lasted 2 or 3 months. I think a lot of people say, oh, I'll retire, but I'm bored. Maybe I'll go back. But after you do it for 3 years, it's very unlikely that any of these retirees, not only they'll be older, they will return. That means we're going to have a shortage, not just on physicians that we already have, but we have a shortage of a lot of different professions. There was this early retirement of the people that could retire, because at that point, the only people that were had to work was what we call essentials. We're not going to go into the details of the other sort of start going to say, hey, I better just retire early. That has skewed a little bit some of this. And also there was another fact, and this is just the data that came out. Older employers were terminated more often than younger employers during COVID, and that might have reduced somewhat the age. What does that also can do is that, as we know, younger employers are less trained, as less careful. They might increase injuries in the future, but we don't know. Everything with COVID, as I said, some of it are clear, but we don't know what's going to happen 3 years from now, or maybe when things not necessarily quiet down, but when things reach themselves. But today in America, if you look at the labor statistics, there is a deficit of 3 to 4 million employees. That's why we have this amazingly low unemployment rate. That is, it's unheard of in decades. And there is more people trying to hire than there are people that want to be hired. Obviously, there was all sorts of discussions. Maybe it was the incentives, and then that people eventually they'll run out of the incentives. But most of these incentives, they're already gone a long time ago, and people are not returning. Maybe this needs to be faced as a paradigm shift. Maybe there was a huge retirement. People decided to live in a different way. And there is a pressure at this point of the employees having a little bit of an upper hand, because you see certain professions that during COVID work remote, and now it's been very hard to readjust to work in the office, and it's been some turmoil. That means COVID has really thrown a curveball, but at the same time, I think it's not just a curveball. I think it's also a paradigm shift. Like you see nurses, for example, that were in the forefront of the epidemic, realizing, you know what, maybe I don't want to work on the forefront. Maybe I can get, and there are options for nurses to work in different professions. That means that they're not necessarily patient related. That means that there was a paradigm shift. That means I don't know exactly how it's going to work out in the end, but I believe that we are not going to have millions and millions of people joining in baby boomers continue to retire. There is less of a, the next generation is much less numerous than the baby boomers. That means I don't see this being compensated in the short term. In the long term, I'm sure it will be there is adjustments that, that the system have. That's the overall for this question.
What are some preventative measures for keeping the aging worker safe?
Well, there's several things that, you know, as an employer, you can do. You definitely want, not just for your younger, but much more for your older employees, try to stimulate exercise, physical activity, because a fitter person is a person that less likely to injure themselves or and will have a much faster recovery. That means I think it's always a smart thing to stimulate, be helping with gym memberships or stimulating activity in the office. Let's say do different activities throughout the day, maybe walking lunches or, you know, things that can help people keep moving. And that's one piece. Another thing, obviously, is make the office ergonomically friendly environment. And that's been going on for decades. I think we have hit this multiple times, but it's always important to understand, you know, how to lift things. Continue to train, because no matter how many times you hear things, if you don't hear it again, you probably don't do it. Make the office more ergonomically safe, and if there is ways to avoid certain things like lifting heavy loads or other ways to do things, it should always be looked into. That means having an occupational therapist to do an analysis of your office or your company, it's always helpful. Not everything can be implemented, and you can't avoid everything that can be making employee injury prone, but you can try to avoid as much as you can. Another factor, it's also, we know that satisfaction, employee satisfaction is quite, there's a huge correlation between being satisfied with your job and even decreasing the number of injuries and even getting back to work. That means trying to make this employee happier. And I think one of the things is flexibility. You know, a big one right now is everybody wants to work from home. Not necessarily that's even a possibility for a lot of professions, but maybe there are certain things that can be allowed, like breaks in a different way or schedules that can be varied. Instead of, for example, everybody has to work 9 to 5 or 9 to 4, maybe do some variations of that. That means try to increase the satisfaction, because amazingly enough, it does affect injuries and recovery. And that's what I would say is the best. It works for all employees, but it certainly works pretty well with older individuals.
So what should we expect in the future regarding the aging workforce?
The tendency, you know, if we completely, not completely, but we don't focus on the paradigm shift that COVID did. COVID did change a little bit this clear aging process that we're seeing happening. But I don't think it will be strong enough that would change the tendency. I think we will continue to be an aging of the population, of the labor force, because it's just the population is aging as a group. I think there is likely is going to be, I put this in quotation mark, a smaller workforce, because in reality, the prediction is that we're going to have more employees in the future than we have today. But I think they will be maybe in different areas. Like, for example, elderly care is going to be huge in the future, because we're going to have a lot of elderly people. We're going to have need a lot of younger people to take care of them. And those kind of jobs can't really be done by or a computer or artificial intelligence or even computers like in Japan. You know, the life expectancy in Japan is going to go up to like 93 years, I think in 10 years. And they're trying to use computer to take care of the elderly. but obviously doesn't work, is the type of thing that we do still need human beings and will need for probably decades and decades to come. That is not to say that some other areas will be some major changes in terms of how the labor force will be functioning. I think the United States is in a privileged position. You know, if you compare, for example, all the richer countries in the West, the United States is the only one that has a tendency to grow its workforce, and we need that to maintain the country functioning. And some of it is for immigration, because we know that just reproduction is not really replacing. We are below replacement levels in the United States, as most of the Western world is already, and most of Asia is also. That means the tendency in the future is to have less and less kids, and the population will be decreased, but we need this help. Another thing that I think it can happen in the future, I don't know how it's going to affect with older or younger, is that I think, you know, anybody that's old enough remembers the 70s and 80s, that we had automation and computers, and then eventually continue into several decades after that, taking over most of the what we call blue collar workers. You know, that I think it's a pretty silly description, but that's everybody understands when you think about that. There are people that do more of a labor, more of a physical job, and then you have the blue collar workers, the one that worked in papers and then computers. And I think one of the changes we're going to see, we're already seeing, is that blue collar workers, or the works that blue collars do, has become stabilized. We still need mechanics, we still need plumbers, we still need attendants, but we don't know what's going to happen with a lot of the white collars that we have, the jobs that we have today. Are they going to be completely or at least partially compensated by computers, or now what we call artificial intelligence? I don't know if necessarily that is truth, but nobody really knows how that's going to work. It might be a way to, how do we change this paradigm? That means, I remember I was young when they'll tell a blue collar worker, says, well, you know, what you need to do is go back to school and study. Well, maybe we need to do the same thing for white collar workers that get substituted by this and that. But I think the skills will be much higher at that point. And in reality, I think it will be some of reverse of that, because we're going to need people with hands-on, like, as I said, elderly care. That means maybe we'll see a reverse of this. And again, we're going to need more of the younger population, because white-collar workers can work much longer than blue-collar workers for the obvious reasons that physical work is much harder. And there is a compounding effect of injury. When you do a heavy labor work, it's very hard for you to be working at 65 and 70, but a white-collar worker can probably be an accountant until they're 75 or 80, if they are well up in his cognition. That means I think it's going to be a future of high skills and low skills in a lot of degrees, because we're going to need people to really do certain things that computers or automation cannot do. And I think there's a lot of that in there. And I think we are set up in a good way, in the sense that we seem to have been able to attract enough younger employees, hopefully, for the future. The only thing, they're probably going to have to be somewhat trained, because we get a lot of unskilled labor to come into the country. But that's all discussion for another moment. But I think at least is a positive outlook for America in general. But the tendency still is older. But we have to see how COVID shakes and how people feel about these new changes in substitution of white collar jobs. That's my two cents here.
We've reached the end of our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please visit the Prima website to hear other Prima podcasts, view upcoming Prima webinars, read Prima blogs, and learn about other Prima educational resources. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our very own Prima Talk. Have an amazing day.